No, I don't think there's merit in that position. What I do think is, unfortunately, we are inching towards piecemealing of budgets, unlike what Governor Rauner wanted to do. And I say that because we do have a budget in K through 12 education. We do very recently have a component, a piece of the motor fuel tax as it relates to municipalities and release of over $3 billion for 911 services, for roads, for salt, for things for our roads during the winter, as well as some lottery funding and some other incidentals that are part of that legislation. So there's very little movement in the overall picture, but I don't think that it's something you can put a conspiracy theory behind. I think, unfortunately, it's just bold-headed stubbornness.
Cuts are happening in this piecemeal fashion as certain things get approved begrudgingly. Isn't there a better way to do this, even if it is politically uncomfortable?
There's about another 18 appropriation bills out there that need to be in place for a budget for the state of Illinois. And looking at the scenario that we presently have is, the haves and the haves not. The haves that are protected by contract or federal court order through the General Assembly mandating payment for certain things, and then those who aren't falling under the writ, not receiving funds for whatever the program case may be. The better way, obviously, is we want our budget. Time has eluded the General Assembly and the Speaker and the Governor, in this case, unfortunately, but the work continues. Most recently, in the last couple weeks, there has been more talks than there has been in the past, more negotiations, so we're cautiously optimistic.
This next question has a longish setup, and I'll apologize for that, but I think the context is interesting. Rich Miller, the analyst and blogger at Capital Facts, had a piece that deconstructed what happened when a supporter of Governor Rauner asked House Speaker Mike Madigan how much of a tax increase was appropriate. Madigan hedged, but his starting point for negotiation was returning to the 5% level present under former Governor Quinn. Miller talked about the Rauner response, redefining it as a Madigan tax hike, asking rank-and-file Democrats if they stood with tax hike Mike, and so on. It was a push, push, push kind of thing, a military tactic used to force over and under reactions by disorienting the opposition by rapid small strikes. Miller said Governor Rauner won the day, and if you add enough days together, you can move the public opinion needle and win your point. Do you agree with Miller that's what's happening on both sides?
To some degree, yes, I do. It's certainly a game of chess, if you will, between the Speaker and the Governor from the standpoint of who makes what move and who then reacts to what move has occurred. Looking where the Governor has started to where the Governor now finds himself when you talk about his turnaround agenda or certain points that he feels needs to be part of the budget that he needs for reforms in workers' comp or whatever the case may be, he has really moved and conceded down to about really 4 points. And the movement from the Speaker is what's lacking, in my opinion, when it comes to the negotiation side of things. Back to the tax talk for just a moment. You know, as we now begin to inch ever so closer to a primary election season, I don't know if the Speaker can't get something like that done in early January, that he's going to have all his rank and file members locking arms and being supportive of something like that.
Well, one new appointee has said he's not on board, in fact.
Correct. Well, you've had other representatives from the Democratic caucus that have said the same thing, and certainly you're not going to see Republican votes on something like that
without
a lot of give from the other side.
But Madigan hasn't seen a lot of opposition in primary challenges to his loyalists. He's probably not going to lose his majority. He might lose his supermajority on this issue because it's a very tough issue for anyone to vote on.
You'd have to look at the raw numbers, but I know that in some of the potential, if not even a primary, a general election down the road, next November we're talking about, there's going to be a handful of Democratic representatives that are going to be very, very cautious, I think, talking about or if we potentially have some type of a tax vote.
Are we supposed to wait till November?
I'm not saying wait till November. I'm just saying that that record would follow certainly anybody into a general election with that type of a vote. So that vote's got to come very early in the spring session. And so it would be very interesting to see how it would be structured. And of course, if there's going to be the consideration of some type of a tax increase, which the governor has openly said, I will talk about that with you if you would give me this and this so we could move on. And he hasn't shut the door to that. And this is a guy that as governor has come around, I think, to the scene that the way things started out, you know, he sees understanding this is a lot different than one of your businesses. This is a lot different from the fact of being able to forge ahead solely and get something done. And that's the frustration, I'm sure, that he feels as well as a lot of us feel. But, you know, when you bring it back to something as important as to our area and my district, it's higher education is beginning to see the cracks in the dam as far as what this budget impasse is forcing them.
Well, we've talked about peeling off Democrat votes from any tax hike vote or any budget measure. What about Republicans? Governor Rauner continues to make campaign contributions. Can you conceive of a point at which some members of your side of the aisle would pressure the governor to move more than he's comfortable moving because they're worried?
I think that we would have those type of negotiations or discussions, I should say, which we have had discussions with the governor, especially those of us in the Republican leadership in the House and the Senate. Has been very candid with the governor on a number of issues of where he was in one particular position and we were thinking of another. And he has been open to people articulating a different way of doing something. And so, you know, I think those discussions will be there at the time in which we're going to be faced with something like that, whether it's tax or something else.
Is it reaching a critical mass where some members of the GOP caucuses are saying, I can't do this?
On certain things that you hear, and what makes that up, that pressure point up, is, of course, the lay of your legislative district. For someone in southern Illinois who's a representative having some of the votes that were taken throughout this past session, in particular, rubbing against the grain of unions or something like that, those are all things that going and talking with the governor to understand that particular dynamics of a person's legislative district, he has been open to that. He hasn't been understanding of that. But it's not a critical mass at this point, as far as I'm concerned.
You talked about the governor having given some sign of movements and reduced his turnaround agenda to about 4 points, but the deal breaker appears to be the union issue, and he hasn't given way on that one. Where is the way forward? We've asked you that several times in the last 6 months, and you've said things like, okay, workers' comp, mm-hmm. plus cuts could be the balance to a revenue increase. What is the way forward today?
I think one of the way forwards is from the appropriations chairman or the appropriations committee, of which I'm minority spokesman on higher education, is working with the chairman, the Democratic chairman of whatever appropriations committee it might be, and drafting budget scenarios and presenting to the governor and the speaker, would you look at this proposal? And let's just talk higher education for a minute. When the governor had his budget address clear back in February of this year, he outlined about a 31% cut to higher education. I think higher education was bracing for somewhere between 15 to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
I have, and our staff and our Republican caucus, has not only tried to work with our counterpart in higher education, the chairman of the committee, Representative Ken Duncan, but others, and have had discussion and have had proposals put together that would try and meet in the middle somewhere. For instance, when the budget that the Democrat majority passed back in May that the governor vetoed, you were looking at somewhere around 6.5% to 7% cut to higher education. The governor wanted 31%. That is a long way away from each other. Looking at a scenario where we talk about somewhere between 15 to 20% cut, and can we, as a in a bipartisan approach, get that to the speaker, get that to the governor, which there's been scenarios presented. No one has bit on that hook just yet, but I think that's going to be the way out of this when there is more of those scenarios by the appropriations committees and getting the governor and the speaker to try and find some common ground.
If that's going to be the middle ground, and higher education was already planning for that. Mm-hmm. Why has it taken so long? You said bullheaded stubbornness, but come on.
Well, I think it's taking so long because, as I referred to earlier, the speaker has continued to be steadfast in his belief that every Rahner proposal on this turnaround agenda is not related to the budget, where the governor sees it as structural reform that is needed for the long-term financial stability for our budget. And I believe it is related to the budget.
We've talked about those involved in the political process, and you no doubt hear daily from people like that. But what about the public at large? Are you hearing from people? Is the public engaged, or do they see the pain? The rank-and-file public, which isn't usually active.
The rank-and-file public, I believe, is engaged. If their daily life is not affected by the state budget directly, it's indirectly somehow. Mm-hmm. And I think they are engaged, and I think they are, like many of us, obviously frustrated. And then there are those whose budgets and operations and daily lives are directly affected by the state budget. And I hear, obviously, from those more, just hearing from one particular agency that said, if we can't get some of the back dollars that have been frozen, that is in at an impasse because of this budget, we are talking and looking at mid-January of closing our doors.
PATH.
That is one.
PATH has said we need a loan somewhere.
Right.
And we either have to pay commercial rates or higher than commercial rates,
right,
because we're having trouble getting credit from ordinary banks. They've gone
correct
public with that.
Correct. And Karen Zangerle and I, as well as other legislators, certainly have had discussions very recently and are trying to advocate on her behalf for the funding that is there. And in her case, it's not that some of the funding is not there. In her particular case with PATH, it's that the funds haven't been released due to a state budget. And here's an example of one agency and provider not covered under the contracts or writ from the federal court that is mandating the comptroller to issue checks.
Getting back to the public's response, are you hearing things differently now from the ordinary public, not those involved in the process, than you did 6 months ago?
What I'm hearing differently now from the general public is more so, this has gone on so long, you know, you're going to be trying to work on 2017's budget. How can we do this? How can this go on? How can this be operate this way? And in a big part, when you have the federal courts that have stepped in, that wasn't there before, as I've said, under Governor Blagojevich at the time when we went into overtime session and had severe budget problems and a severe problem between then Speaker Madigan and Governor Blagojevich of the same party, I might add.
Does the public have enough pressure to force change? Will there become a tipping point from public opinion on this?
I don't know when that tipping point will be. What I do know is the pressure points that were there in the past when we had a budget impasse are not there now. Therefore, it gives the facade that, well, nothing's really happening. Everybody's getting paid. Everything is going along without an appropriations of a state budget, which obviously we just outlined and articulated is not the case.
Mm-hmm.
However, a large portion of what should be the state's budget is being paid out, in particular to employees, in particular to some of those that are protected by different contracts, et cetera. And so therefore, you know, if you're doing your job and you're getting paid, this is kind of out of sight, out of mind, as long as things are okay in my little corner of the state. But that's not true for everybody.
So we circle back to not enough generalized pain is being felt.
Correct. And I think that whether the governor makes a point to declare some type of a fiscal emergency in this state due to the budget, defy the federal court's orders, stop paying, pretty much stop state government, shut state government down with the exception of maybe some essential services, that's when you're going to have people back at the table. That's when you're going to have people talking. That's when you're going to have the pressure like you've never seen that you've got to get a budget and you've got to end this impasse and start moving forward. And I don't know what the trigger is for that.
Further out, does the disenchantment in the public's mind created by this failure to act by both sides, it typically suppresses voter turnout. Does it suppress voter turnout for November in a way that benefits one side or the other?
I don't know that it does benefit one side or the other. I think that everyone is going to wear the collar of this mess, meaning Republicans, Democrats, General Assembly overall, governor, speaker, etc. And so I don't know that one side wins or not from an election standpoint. I just know that the people and the frustration level is at a level I've never seen before, and I understand why. But I don't know from a political standpoint who really stands to gain. You hear different things. I just know we're all painted with the same brush in the minds of most of the people that it's just a mess, and they're the ones that need to get the mess cleaned up.
Representative Dan Brady has been a part of Bloomington Normal's political landscape for decades. He is in House leadership. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Charlie.
I'm Charlie Schlenker.